Lecture of the 18th of March, 1922. Rudolf Steiner starts by asking his audience, will you permit me to tell you a little about the course of the Berlin University course, about the progress of the university course that I gave in Berlin. The Berlin University course arranged its program in a special way. It was supposed to represent the connection between the branches of life sciences and sciences in the present time to the anthroposophical world conception. The individual days were supposed to be devoted to a special branch of science or life science. And so the week was divided. It began with the Sunday, which was dedicated to inorganic natural science. Monday was supposed to be dedicated to the organic natural science and medicine. Tuesday to philosophy, Wednesday to pedagogy, Thursday to economy, the economic question, and Friday to theology. Saturday was supposed to be dedicated to the speech science. And then on Sunday, the whole thing should achieve a certain conclusion in a presentation of Eurythmy in the Deutsche Theater. The program was so arranged that every day it should begin with a short lecture by myself. Evenings, there were lectures by other people in the rooms of the Berlin University. And so the days were extraordinarily richly filled. Let's consider the individual days. Sunday, the 5th of March, the title was of the... Sunday, the 5th of March, was entitled From the Life Estrangement Mechanistic to a True Phenomenology. It was hoped, through anthroposophy, to arrive at a phenomenology as a basis of the inorganic natural science. Monday, paths of anthroposophical human knowledge in biology and medicine. Tuesday, the establishment of anthroposophy out of the philosophical consciousness of the present time. Wednesday, from the modern pedagogical demands to its realization through anthroposophy. Thursday, the title was Ausblicke, views, glances into the national economy. Friday dealt with theology, and that didn't have any special title. On Saturday, the title was From the Dead Speech Science to the Living Speech Science. The Friday lecture had the title The Decline of Religion in Present Theology and Its New Establishment Through Anthroposophy. Here, everything has been formulated in a negative way. But through anthroposophy, a theology and religion could experience a renewal. The formulation of all these titles was so arranged that they could proceed on the one side out of the consciousness of the present time, and out of the other side from an idea as to how out of this consciousness of the present time, out of this consciousness of the present time, anthroposophy could become. Anthroposophy could develop from out of the consciousness of the present time. The Sunday lecture, entitled From the Life Estranging Mechanistic to a True Phenomenology, pointed to the fact that there should be overcome all speculation about the atomistics, all speculation about a mechanistic grasping of lifeless nature. But you should focus upon an observation, a consideration of what exists in front of you in the phenomena, in the manifestations, and how these phenomena should speak for themselves, because they themselves provide their theory. In other words, how Goetheanism is applied in the natural science. As far as the organic natural science, it was brought to expression that one is ought to build the whole circumference of organic natural science upon the knowledge of the human being. And from the knowledge of the human being, then to investigate the other kingdoms of nature. And not to consider these other kingdoms zerstückelt, broken up into pieces. As far as philosophy was concerned, it was shown how the philosophical consciousness has arrived at some kind of end. It was indicated by Hegel at the beginning of the 19th century when he said that all philosophy of the present time has come to an end, that one, in the main, all you could do is to look back into the way philosophy has developed unto now, but a further development was not possible. He tried to show how a new beginning can occur in the realm of philosophy, if you configure this beginning in the anthroposophical sense. As far as pedagogy was concerned, we brought to the attention the fact that in the present time there are certain demands in the field of pedagogy, but they put up such demands which they cannot fulfill unless they utilize the knowledge provided by anthroposophy. In these speech sciences, it was supposed to be shown how speech itself ought to be grasped as a living organism in the connection with a human being. About the social sciences, all I can say is to add to what was said in a very illuminating way by Emil Leinhaus out of his knowledge about the money problem of the present time. As far as the problem of national economy, it was shown that, taken in the main, our anthroposophical movement has not fostered this aspect of national economy sufficiently. As far as theology was concerned, it's interesting to consider the titles of the lectures which followed my introductory words. The first title of Bock's lecture was The Decline of Religion into Psychologismus, Psychologismus. The second, by Rittelmeyer, The Decline of Theology into Irrationalism. And the third, by Dr. Geyer, The Decline of Theology into Historismus. And so we have had to depict the decline of religion in psychologismus into irrationalismus and into historismus. And see that within theology itself, we've arrived at a dead point. Bock emphasized the fact that in religion, they have arrived only to focus upon the soul experience, which one designate as a religious experience, perhaps as a divine experience is. Actually, they are limited to a subjective experience, something of a purely psychological nature, without having any correspondence to something in the objective world. Psychological fact is that man needs religion, but the present time is not capable of giving a real content to religion. Rittelmeyer pointed out that the thought element has to be eliminated from the theological element. Rational, which originates out of the reason element, should be put aside, and the irrational, that which excludes the thought, that is supposed to become the content of theology. So in theology, you actually arrive at the most extreme abstractions. They don't want concrete thoughts, they prefer to have extreme abstractions. Commit themselves to saying that the nature of the Godhead is unconditioned, it's the absolute. This actually boils itself down to an irrational negation, meaningless negation. And when the human being tries to relate himself in this irrational way to lift himself up to a grasping of the divinity, how does he experience this lifting up? He experiences this lifting up in a schweigend, a silent way. Not the silence of the mystical experience, which can be something very positive, but the silence belonging to the fact of the not being able to express inward in thoughts. Silence is supposed to take hold in the cult. Of course, they have an absolute powerlessness to formulate something of a real nature. They take the recourse to complete silence. In the third theological lecture by Geyer about the decline of theology into historismus, Geyer attempted to show how theology has arrived at the position of no longer having in itself something of a creative nature, but to consider only that which was already been in the past, to study what has a consistent history, in order in that way to come to a content. You could say that in the past people had a religious consciousness, but today all they have the possibility of doing is to look back into the past and to consider the different stages of religious consciousness in the past. As my introductory lecture was concerned, I mentioned that anthroposophy wants to restrict itself to become a knowledge, a cognition of the supersensible worlds. And if theology wants to be fructified by this knowledge, then let them do it. Anthroposophy wants to restrict itself to what it can say as a result of its researches into the supersensible worlds, and from its own side, anthroposophy can wait until theology wakes up to find out what it can use of this supersensible knowledge. I ought to mention that these three lectures were spoken out of a pure consciousness from the Protestant aspect. A Catholic theologian would be in a quite different position from these three Protestant theologians. This Catholic theologian would have emphasized that the present time has to grasp its religion in the same way as was grasped in the second, third centuries of the Christian era. Certainly the councils that followed, and in the 18th century, later on the infallibility of the Pope aspect, that has added to it. But these are single dogmas which have been added. The whole nature of a Catholic theology is something which does not depend upon the time evolution, and wants to, in its own way, to carry a perennial character, a continuing similar character, without realizing the modifications that are necessary in the course of the evolution of time. Perhaps if a more progressive man would have spoken about Catholic theology, so perhaps he might have spoken of what the struggles and the struggles, the striving, the wrestling produced by such Catholic thinkers as Cardinal Newman. If a less developed Catholic theologian would have spoken, he would have spoken about the eternal doctrine of salvation as coming from the Catholic Church. Then questions would have emerged of immense significance. That question as to what actually exists in Catholic theology for present-day man. In the Catholic theology, without doubt, as it occurs, there is nothing of a living nature for the present consciousness. However, once upon a time, it was of a living nature. Its content absolutely rests upon the result of ancient spiritual investigations, even though perhaps they were the result of atavistic spiritual investigations. That which is contained in Catholic theology about the facts of creation and salvation, about the content of the Trinity, about all these things. These are real concepts, they are something which actually has a content, but a content which the modern consciousness can no longer grasp, but is presented to modern consciousness in an abstract, non-understandable dogmatism, and is supposed to be taken as an ununderstandable, dry dogmatic. In particular, the development of Catholic theology in the 19th century was so that there was no longer cognized in it as that which is the actual content of these dogmas. And in reference to that, precisely in this university course in Berlin, we have a very interesting experience. I had on Friday, in my introduction, out of a direct experience, I have said the following, which you already know. I said the following: the person who experiences that which exists in our nature in environment, and in that which attaches itself to this nature environment, arrives at a consciousness of the Father God, unless he is in some way inwardly crippled. That person who then during his life recognizes the insufficiency of the Father God and experiences a kind of inner rebirth, that person would come to experience of the Son God, the Son God. And then in the same way, by proceeding further, one can arrive at the Spirit experience. Now, there was a Protestant university lecturer there. He said, aha, there we have the Trinity. That is something which one must construieren, construct. And he called that a construction. He did not notice the fact that this was the result of actual experiences. This was quite foreign to him. Similar way that it's foreign, those experiences of the modern consciousness of the 19th century, which are at the basis of the Catholic dogma. These Catholic dogmas naturally go back to spiritual realities. However, one understands nothing of it. They've become empty concepts. However, at least in the 19th century, one wanted to arrive at least of having an external enlivening of that which lives in the Catholic theology. You know indeed that this impulse, you can understand a little of this impulse which lives in this Catholic theology, and this impulse came specially under the pontificate of Leo XIII, arrived at the Catholic decree to return back to the study of the Thomistic philosophy, the philosophy of Thomas Aquinas, because the whole of the later philosophy was no longer utilizable in order to understand something of the Catholic dogmas. All the philosophy following Thomism was utilizable only to understand the natural existence, in order to give natural science a foundation, but not to give a foundation for spiritual facts. Facts which are formulated in the Catholic dogmas were formulated in a time in which one understood these spiritual facts, which later on could not be understood. Hence, the requirement to understand them again, to understand what really exists in the Catholic dogmas, and they demanded a renewal of the study of Thomism. which today is the actual philosophical striving within the Roman Catholicism. On the basis of this, there exist historical realities. And if one compares that which is actually necessary in order to arrive at a position of being able to enter into the spiritual, so one sees, one realizes that naturally also Thomism is not sufficient in order to enliven that which has been rigidified into the Roman dogmas. One has to arrive at a quite different consideration. I want to remind you how in the previous lectures I tried to represent to you how Hamlet could be a student of Faust, where Hamlet had sat for 10 years at the feet of Faust. And in those 10 years, where Faust took his student and led him around by the nose. When you take, for example, such a profane domain, then you will see how it is necessary, what you have to do in order to arrive at a mobility of the spirit, which could then supply a basis for the grasping of that which has been preserved in the dogmas. All those ideas which I said about the relationship of Hamlet and Faust was received by the present literary historians as a quite distorted presentation. To remind you that one has to go back to a quite different soul constitution in order to be able to arrive and to enter into that which lives in such dogmas. And this is demonstrated by the development course of Cardinal Newman. Now, perhaps it's in Berlin obviously to be understood that with such a university course, one could speak only from the Protestant standpoint and leave the Catholic standpoint unconsidered. However, a picture of that which holds sway actually today, naturally one does not receive if one's not in the position to consider the Catholic standpoint, particularly today, where we have again the necessity to glance over the whole world. If you know about church science, church politic, however, there exists something about the church world conception. And this church world conception confronts one strongly when you see, for example, on the Friday evening, where Dr. Theberat lectured about the theme atomism and the chemical atomistische und wirklichkeitsgemäße Betrachtung chemischer Prozesses. The atomistic consideration of chemical processes and a consideration of chemical processes according to reality. Dr. Theberat, who is in our research institute in Stuttgart, he attempted to show how one must leave this atomistics and must carry phenomenology also into chemistry. And then there entered into the debate Dr. Kurt Grelling. I now will not speak about Dr. Kurt Grelling, who spoke something like the following. Indeed, in anthroposophy, all sorts of things are spoken. But to me, all those things are not yet probable. What I am sure of is 2 times 2 equals 4. And you must hold yourself to that which you're sure of. 2 times 2 is 4, Of this I'm sure. Obviously, I can't deny that 2 times 2 is actually 4. Dr. Gredding proceeded to say, indeed, one can decide about the questions that are brought forward about phenomenology. However, you cannot decide these from the standpoint of natural science, but only from the standpoint of philosophy. In England, if they hear someone say, one cannot decide in a natural scientific way, only from a philosophical way, in England, one would not be able to apply any sense to this proposition. Because this sort of distinction is something which proceeds from the church world conception. This formalization one can know within certain Central European circles, but the English people would not be able to understand that sort of distinction between the decision made upon natural scientific grounds and the decision made upon philosophical grounds. Such a distinction could only occur in Central Europe. At the end of all this, it was shown that the present thinking is not at all in the position of approaching that which could be a spring for the theological, a source, a quell, a spring for the theological content. And so that in Berlin, there are no bridges between that which comes from modern evangelical theology and that which would come out of anthroposophy for the enlivening of the religious consciousness. All you could have are indications which are supposed to be pointed from anthroposophy. However, how that should configure itself, actually that was not spoken about. We have to point out that the very large attendances to these lectures showed and proved that there is something living in the anthroposophical movement which beats in strongly and intensively to present consciousness. I'm very happy to remind myself with a very certain inner joy when it was spoken on Saturday by Dr. Carl Schubert, titled Anthroposophy and the Language Science. He also wanted to show from his side how the language science is supposed to play a role in the political life of thinkers and races. And after that, there was a very, very temperamental debate. He wanted to point to that which exists in today in language science, when you consider it as it is today, and what it could be if it were fructified by anthroposophy. Things were very full of vim and vigor. It was full of temperament. The German word temperament means spirited, vivacious. Particularly when he said that he was in Berlin, he studied the different teachers of language science, but then he had to come into anthroposophy in order to enliven this language science. And only then it became light for him. And then he found what this present language science is. And he called it a Misthaufen, of manure. And then he banged on the table. That's how he was able to characterize the present time. Now the evening lectures were then constituted as attempts were made to give a picture of the anthroposophical content. This was particularly very significant. Lectures by Dr. Stein, Dr. Schwab, two teachers of the Waldorf School, were able to give perceptible pictures of the pedagogical working in the Waldorf schools. I might say, one could experience very much of a remarkable nature through the lines. The whole course then ended on Sunday. I still had to hold on Sunday evening still the concluding lecture. However, the lectures, the whole conference concluded with a full occupied house in which you had a Eurythmy presentation in the Deutschen Theater, which had an extraordinary strong success. I really don't need to tell you that if you would take into your hand some kind of newspaper, so you'll read just the reverse of actually happened. As one of our people who approached a newspaper to write an article about this university course. And then the editor asked him, is this article pro or contra? Then he answered, his article would be pro. Then he would receive the reply, no, we won't accept that, we'll accept only contra articles. The whole course was a very strong and filled course. Just take one kind of day, an average day, where you have five lectures and a discussion. That's something a lot for a person today. In one day to have five lectures and one discussion, I had the opportunity from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and then starting again at 8 o'clock to 10:30, to live in such thoughts. But naturally, it would be very helpful if in the intervals, as it was in Stuttgart, very humorous, whimsical Eurythmy lectures would have occurred. Indeed, I was in a city, and I had opportunity to speak to a theologian. He told me, he said, we attended a theological conference in Eisenach, and there indeed they presented us something like Eurythmy. He said, I don't know what we theologians could do with that. We were quite astonished. We didn't know how to attach ourselves to what we were seeing. Give an indication of the characteristics of our age. Another story about a gentleman who visited me and told me that he once went to one of my lectures, one of my Philharmonie lectures in Berlin, and he took an opera glass and looked around and found a number of people falling asleep. All these sort of opinions. However, I must not forget to tell you something which really made me very happy. Something which demonstrated itself in reference to the German anthroposophical movement which manifested itself in Berlin, namely the student Einschlag. They came to listen with an extraordinary deep seriousness and earnestness. Happy to see that it's beginning to have an impact upon the student circles. Now, tomorrow I will have to enter into some special questions. And I will enter into a one special question. He ends the lecture.